I once said, regretfully, I have no conflict of interest to report, and I was in the wrong group. Not a lot of sense of humor among the folks that I was sharing that with. I will be co-presenting this morning. My name is Pat Libby. I am currently working as the co-director of the Center for Sharing Public Health Services. By way of background, and interesting given what we've talked about today, this morning, I was a local health director in Washington State for about 25 years. I then served as the executive director of the National Association of County and City Health Officials, and during that time was actually one of the founding incorporating board members of FAB, so some connection there. When I left NACHO, I began doing some work for the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, examining issues on why local health departments, governmental public health at a local level, doesn't do a better job of sharing its resources, its assets, figuring out how they can use those. What are the issues and what are the barriers? Some of that work then led to the foundation, and we'll talk just a bit about that, creating a national program, a demonstration kind of thing, to look at issues around sharing public health services. What enables it? How can we learn about that? Who's involved? And so forth. I am reconciled to the fact that I'm a Luddite. Where'd I go? I just went to the end of this. I apologize. And we're done. Okay.
Here we go.
All right. What am I? No, I'm going backwards. What am I doing? I thought I was. Pardon? Let's. Why is that? Are you having fun, John Franco, my co-director, who is always laughing? Why? What do I have to? Oh, okay, okay. I was hitting the wrong. How's this for working backwards? So who are we? The Center for Sharing Public Health Services was established with support from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, housed at the Kansas Health Institute, and a relatively recent organization and a move in just this past year. Our primary purpose is to assist public health agencies, local public health, state health departments, and policymakers, and we'll come back, because issues of actually sharing a jurisdiction's resources with another jurisdiction are as much a responsibility, and oftentimes the authority to do that rests more with the policymaker than with the health department or the health official themselves. We're developing the evidence behind, identifying, and running a series of demonstration sites, 16 demonstration sites involving about 76 local and state health departments and serving almost 200 jurisdictions. Identifying, building tools, learning, and then importantly sharing that information with the constituencies in the communities, the national organizations that represent health officials, that represent elected officials, as well as the like. So today what we want to do is very, very briefly frame the issue of cross-jurisdictional sharing and introduce what in a sense is a summary of what we have been learning in this first year in the form of a tool and a roadmap on a sequence or a process that appears to be from what we have learned both within public health and in cross-jurisdictional sharing in other public service sectors, what appears to be a pattern for success. Okay, I already told you I have nothing to disclose, regretfully. Definitions. We are evolving a definition of cross-jurisdictional sharing as the deliberate exercise of public authority to enable collaboration across jurisdictional boundaries to deliver essential public health services. And it's a subset of a broader definition that is increasingly being used in public administration circles of collaboration, meaning the ability, working across boundaries and in multiple organizational arrangements, to solve problems that cannot be solved or easily solved by single organizations or jurisdictions. This in particular is becoming the kind of the working definition for city and county managers, for which cross-jurisdictional sharing, not unique to public health but not exclusive of public health, is one of their three top policy issues and priorities for the future. We've also identified, in a sense, a spectrum of cross-jurisdictional sharing, and we use the word spectrum deliberately rather than continuum. Continuum often implies a movement, and we want to be very clear, this is not a progression. Likely, most health departments are engaged in several cross-jurisdictional sharing activities at any single point in time, but if you look at this moving left from right, you have relatively informal, simple things. You move toward, no, I just contradicted myself. Your next column gives you a somewhat more complex but fairly simple transactional arrangement. I'm buying services from a neighbor. You can see things that are more complex where you are doing something jointly. And lastly, the issue that Patrick mentioned in part, the notion of merging and consolidating, where you have separate entities now formed into a single health department through merging or through consolidation. But interestingly, any point on this spectrum shares common characteristics. There is a legal base for doing it, there's a duration, there's what is being shared, and there's a governance and oversight function, even at the informal level. And it's kind of an interesting, you can start to characterize. Not uncommon for a health department to be engaged in several points along that scale at any one time and not necessarily with the same partners. Key players. John Franco and I are both soccer fans. More readily understandable for John Franco Pizzino, perhaps, than a Patrick Mullen Libby. But key players. The public health officials involved and the policymakers. Some cases, boards of health, more often elected officials. Who actually has the authority and the responsibility to sign, in a sense, or to commit the use of the resources? And very rarely will that be the public health official. Most often, actually doing something that commits my resources of my jurisdiction will be an act of a policy body, most often an elected policy body. And oftentimes, those city and county managers are the key bridge between the health official and those policymakers. So some real key players. And their interests and needs in this are not always the same. And in fact, most often aren't the same. There is an attempt to look for the intersection, the balance between greater efficiency and greater capacity, which is a similar to, but not exactly the same as greater effectiveness. Can you do something more efficiently? You can measure it, as we just heard, in terms of cost. You can also measure efficiency in what is the range of the capacity that you're able to now put together that you might not have been able to do by yourself. What we're seeing in the literature, both within public health, cross-jurisdictional sharing, and the field at large, there appear to be factors that are associated with successful arrangements. Prerequisites, clarity of the objectives. If you're not clear that I from an elected position, I'm looking to see if I can be more cost effective. I, as the health official, am wanting to expand the capacity. Those have got to be clear and on the table. That balanced approach, the mutual advantage, and trust. If these two or three or however many jurisdictions historically have not worked well together, it's not likely, in terms of a precondition, starting up. That history, the culture, and the history is a part of that. As noted, what are the facilitating factors, the prerequisites? Success and prior. We're also starting to see, is there a sense, independent of public health, of a regional identity? It might be formed by geographic conditions or boundaries. A mountain area. Do they see themselves in this case, the they being separate jurisdictions, do they see themselves as connected and as in some ways part of the same region? If that's in place, very, very positive. And again, and you'll see this comes up in all of these, positive personal relationships. Do these people play well together? Do they have that history? Are they interactive? And that's both at the health official and at the policymaker level. And then successful projects, often characterized, it takes senior support. We've heard that, I thought, in the first two presentations, clearly this morning. Strong project management skills. Moving into this, these things take time, and they're complex, and we'll hear a bit more about that. Is your project management sound and capable of managing that over time, even sometimes crossing election cycles that may have you starting to have to look back a bit and move again? And that's distinguished from the next, which is the strong management, a change management. It's one thing to manage a project, but to really pay attention to the changes that you're affecting. You may be affecting people's sense of their job, their identity, where do I work, what's this going to mean to me? Change management, which then connects to the how is this communicated, who communicates, do you have the right voices, talking to the right folks, and the like. So, prerequisites, facilitating factors, and project characteristics led us to the development, we think, of a significant tool in helping both our project sites as well as the others that we're working with. Gianfranco.
Good morning, I'm Gianfranco Pizzino. I'm the co-director of the Center for Sharing Public Health Services together with Pat, and I'm a senior fellow at the Kansas Health Institute. So how do we do this? We have developed what we call a roadmap, which can represent guidance for putting together sharing agreements and projects. And there are some copies in the back on the table, and we have some extra copies here, and that's also available online at this address. So based on the evidence that we have collected and we are still collecting, we have identified three phases for the development of cross-jurisdictional sharing agreements. The first phase is what you can refer to as a sort of conceptual feasibility study. Does it even make sense for us as partners around this table to consider a cross-jurisdictional sharing agreement, and what do we want to achieve with that? If and only if the answer is yes to the first questions, then it's time to move into the planning phase. How exactly is that going to work? What are we going to do? And finally, after your plans are done, of course, you move into the implementation. We think that this sequence, these phases should go, should take place in the sequence, in the order that's on this slide. And we found from our experience that sometimes people tend to jump ahead. I think we are very good in public health at being solvers and people of action. And sometimes we don't pause enough before and think, well, why am I doing that and what do I want to achieve with that? If that's the case, it's perfectly okay to step back, and you see there is a loop, a sort of safety exit, if you will, on the right, the dotted lines there. It's perfectly okay to step back and revisit some of the steps that have been skipped from prior phases. And now I'm going to spend a couple of minutes on each of the three phases to give you a sense of the questions that we think are important to be addressed, and there is a more complete list in the full document on the back. So, phase one, exploration. Is cross-jurisdictional sharing a feasible approach to address the issue that we are facing? Here is where the questions of why, what, and who are really critical. Why do we want to do that? What are the goals of this agreement? And what are we considering for sharing? Are we thinking about sharing functions such as human resources or IT or billing, or are we thinking about sharing program activities, MCH, immunizations, environmental health, restaurant inspections, or are we thinking about sharing capacities such as sharing an epidemiology for epidemiologists, for example? I'm an epidemiologist by training, and I would love to see an epidemiologist in every county health department in Kansas, of which we have 100. It wouldn't make sense. Even if they could afford it, I would argue it's probably not the best use of their resources. But sharing one may be a shared capacity that makes more sense. At the same time, it's important to think about issues that should not be considered. There may be things that should be off the table, and it's important to clarify those things at this stage. We don't want to go that direction. Let's not even talk about that. Let's focus on the things where there is a possibility of finding an agreement. And then there is the who portion of this exploration phase, which is who should be at the table? Who are the partners that are actively being involved in this sharing agreement? But also think about other partners or organizations or entities that may be affected by what you are doing and not necessarily be at the decision table with you. Those are people that you need to keep in mind and you will need to address in terms of change management process and communication activities. And also keep in mind that some of these partners will come to the table with different expectations and goals. So something else to explore at this point. Then you're ready to move into the preparation phase. How exactly is this going to work? This is where you can start learning from prior CJS initiatives and think about the governance. Who's going to make decisions? That's very important. Who is going to have the power to make decisions? And is there an exit strategy? We hope that this marriage is going to work, but in case it doesn't, do we know how we're going to divorce without killing each other? That's the ancient way that Italians used to divorce before divorce was legal in Italy. Just kill the wife and you're a free husband. Well, we don't want that to happen in public health. And then does the plan achieve that balance that Pat showed you between improving efficiency and maybe even reducing costs at some point while also enhancing public health services? So that's the planning phase. Still in the planning phase, you want to think about some logistical issues, but two things in particular I want to highlight here are communications and change management. We found from our evidence, the evidence that we collected, that communication is a key point. And I'm referring both to internal communication among the partners and external communications with other stakeholders. In addition, many of these agreements and projects are likely to produce big changes, both for individuals that are affected and for organizations. And in many cases, those changes cannot be avoided. What we can do is managing them and have a plan on how we are going to address the change, how we are going to make the impact of those changes more bearable and easily acceptable by people. Finally, and only now, after all those steps, you're ready for the go. Then you implement your plans. Well, things are relatively easy at this point because you have your plans sorted out, you have your big questions already answered, so what you have to do is essentially keep track of two things. Are you implementing things as planned, and are the activities producing the results and the level of satisfaction as stakeholders that you anticipated? And that's the planning and monitoring phase. Let me conclude this by posing a couple of uncomfortable questions. Give and take, depending on how you count and which day you count, we have about 2,400 local health departments in this country. Do we need 2,400 health departments? Can we afford to have 2,400 health departments? Can we think of a day when all 2,400 health departments will reach the standards necessary to be accredited? And is it politically feasible to change the structure now? Or do we need to look for alternatives? And this is a time of change in public health. I think you heard that before. It's a time when we know that the status quo may no longer be sustainable, but we don't have any clear alternatives that we know are going to be successful. That's exactly the right time to brainstorm together, explore new initiatives, and study how that works and learn together from those initiatives. Thank you.